Hi, my name is George, and I do too many things. Now, it's not a joke, not cracking jokes, not being funny. It's not any kind of a humble brag either. It is a bit of a confession. And if this were AA, this would be the part where I stand up and introduce myself and admit something I've spent a long time denying. Not that I drink, not that I use. But that I pile on. I add projects and commitments, and I add on responsibility and pressure. And of course, I add on expectations. I add until everything feels important and nothing feels meaningful. Now, let me be really clear before we go any further that addiction is most certainly real. It destroys lives, and Alcoholics Anonymous saves lives. So, what I'm not talking about today is chemical dependency. It's not the same thing, and that absolutely deserves respect. But what is similar and what's worth learning from is the structure of recovery, because there's a kind of socially celebrated addiction that many of us, most of us, I bet, are quietly trapped in. And it's an addiction to busyness. It's an addiction to more. It's an addiction to productivity for the sake of productivity. It's saying yes when you ought to be saying no. It's confusing motion with progress. It's confusing importance with just sheer volume. And the hardest part is that this form of addiction is rewarded, it's celebrated, it's commonplace. People will praise you for it. They will refer to you as a driven person. They'll call you ambitious. They will look at you as a high capacity, high performing individual who can easily take on more. While no one stages an intervention for the person who's doing too much, instead, you just watch them slowly disappear. So, recovery, when we're talking about recovery, real recovery always starts the same way. It starts with honesty. It's not resolution, it's not motivation, it's not the need for a new planner, it's honesty. And for me, that honesty sounded a lot like this. If I keep living this way, I'll never become who I'm really capable of being. And that's not because I'm lazy, because I'm a lot of things, but I am not lazy. And it's not because I lack discipline, because I certainly think that I am a pretty disciplined person. It's a function of, in reality, that I'm deluded. Too many things competing for my time, too many things trying to get my attention, too many things sucking my energy. And too many things that I can spend money on. And the realization, sort of the recognition that I'm a proponent of more, as I think that we all are, unless we are really, really, really careful. When I realized that I'm just doing too much, and I saw people around me that I really care for trying to do too much, trying to do one more thing all the time. It's where you realize, well, the answer is not more. It's less. It is understanding this is the thing that really matters. This is my top concern, my number one priority. And in a lot of ways, I think that we have lost sight of that not everything can be the most important thing. By the very nature of your top priority, it means that only one thing can be the most important thing. And when we make that decision, that means that everything else is not as important. But when we sort of lose sight that there's a hierarchy of most important, less important, not important at all, got to get rid of it, that's when I really, that was really the motivation. Genesis, if you will, for my newest book, which is called The Meaningful Few. So that's when this idea was born. And it's not a productivity system or any kind of a framework that's going to allow you to do more, but more of a recovery process. And the deeper truth that I didn't necessarily understand at first is that if more wanted something, if more were a conscience or conscious entity or being of some kind, if it wanted something, it wouldn't want peace. It wouldn't want balance. It wouldn't seek optimal, just right. It would want more. More wants more. Big wants bigger. Big, busy wants busier. Complicated wants more complex. So it's not any kind of a moral judgment on big, more, or complex. It's just a reality. So more is not a strategy. More is a force of nature. More is a, it strikes me, it's kind of a law. That idea that that Parkinson's law, that that work will expand or contract to fill the amount of time available for its completion, and that the value of a budget when it comes to your personal finances is that it gives parameters to your spending, because without that, without any parameters, I think that that your expenses will just continue to grow and consume all available resources. So we have to put parameters or a container around these things. And that's how more is. It just wants more. They're never going to go backwards. Like all forces, it goes in one way. It goes up, up, ever expanding. And again, left alone, it's not going to stabilize. More is never going to say, oh, it's enough for me. More is never going to put their fork down. It's never going to push itself away from the table. It's going to ask, what else? What else? What else? And more certainly doesn't shrink on its own. Federal government didn't evolve to become the largest entity in the history of human beings on accident. No. They didn't say, oh, we got this done. We can shutter this department. You know, we don't need these rules or these laws anymore. We can get them off the books. No, 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 no. It's more. More funding. More headcount. More authority. More processes. More justification. If you've ever tried to shrink something, shrink a bureaucracy, ask Elon Musk what happens when you try to reduce the size and the spending of the federal government. Ask any leader who's tried to cut meetings, layers, or policies. That resistance, it's not a personal thing. It's systemic. More defends itself. And you and I are not the federal government. Maybe you are. Maybe you are part of the deep state. I don't know. But odds are you're not part of that bureaucracy. But you and I are not exempt from more, because the uncomfortable truth is that our lives behave in the same way. Your calendar doesn't want meaning. Your inbox doesn't want peace. Your obligations aren't in pursuit of elegance necessarily. And left to its own devices unattended, your life will quietly become super busy, bloated, loud, and then reactive. And it's not because you chose that. You didn't set out to do that, but it happened because you didn't stop it from doing it. And I'm not saying you, I'm saying me and maybe you. Because most people don't design our lives. We're not that intentional about things, even though we all know that we should be. Just like setting goals. Intellectually speaking, we all know that we should set goals. That's settled science. That's true. Yet only 3% of Americans have written their goals. So this is the same thing. It's the same thing. We are not sitting down consciously saying, no, this is what I want my life to look like. We inherit our lives. We sort of work our way into them one at a time, one meeting at a time, one obligation at a time, one request, one yes at a time. Yes, yes, yes. More, more, more. So going back to AA, recovery is not about never feeling temptation again. It's about awareness. It's about creating structure and community. It's having daily practices, because that's how it goes. Can't imagine your life all at once. We take it one day at a time, one action at a time, one decision at a time. That's the same arc that I'm talking about. So we stop asking, what else can I add? And we start asking, what actually deserves my time, attention, energy, money, my best. What deserves my best? Not that many things. I would wager that not that many things are deserving of the best that you are, the best you have to offer. Because we know that more options don't necessarily create freedom. Living a life of commitment creates freedom. So clarity is subtractive. Excellence requires exclusion. And a meaningful life cannot be lived at full volume. We can't redline. And in some sense, recovery looks like choosing, having a deep appreciation for what matters in the six different areas of your life that do matter, for your family, your community, your work, your finances, for your well-being, your personal development, and for your peace of mind. It is making good choices in each one of those areas and being very, very, very selective. Because when we say yes to one thing, we say no to everything else. But when we say no, we still have the entire universe of choices and options available to us. And that's a powerful thing. When we start treating time, attention, energy, and money as sacred, which they are, instead of finite, that's when we start to make really good progress on these things. So those are our most valuable resources, our MVRs, time, energy, attention, and money. And they're of value because they're finite. We don't have an unlimited amount of any of those things. Not even Elon Musk has an unlimited amount of money. So when we say this thing matters and we let other things just do their own thing, die out, starve, whatever, not everything needs to be, or not everything can be, your top priority. And then we build calendars that reflect our values instead of our impulses. We build calendars and schedule things that are actually reflective of what really matters. You get back to the MVRs. You say, when somebody says to me that getting out of debt or saving for retirement, those are my two top priorities. Great. Well, let's look at how you actually spend your money and how you're using and allocating your money and how you're budgeting. And then that's really going to be the evidence of what matters most to you and what your biggest priorities are. And if nowhere in your budget it says pay off debt and save for retirement, then I would push back and say that those things aren't important to you. And the calendar, that is then reflective of what you say is most important, but then what are you giving your time to? You say that your family, your relationship with your spouse and your kids is the most important thing in the world to you. Well, if I look through your calendar, where would I see the evidence that your family was most important to you? Because if it's not showing up there, is it real? I don't know. So I am a fan of the idea of minimalism because I believe wholeheartedly that the things we own can most certainly end up owning us, and that sometimes in a lot of ways less is more. But I'm not doing it just because I like the idea of it. I like that the result that it gives me. Having more headspace is of value to me. Having more time is of value to me. Having more energy is of value. So being able to cut down on things is in service of those things. But why is it that that's so hard for us? Why does subtraction feel like death? And that's why work feels so uncomfortable, because meaning doesn't just naturally grow. Weeds naturally grow. But if you've ever tried to actually plant something, you know how hard that is. So meaning doesn't just happen. It must be imposed. And in a lot of ways, it's an act of resistance. So subtraction can have a violent feeling to it. Being clear and setting boundaries can feel selfish. And then saying no, well, that can feel like a failure sometimes. When you look and think about everything in total, that makes sense. So when we are resisting more, it will feel like some kind of an accusation. Like, what are you doing? How come you're not taking this on? You're used to taking this on. It's an interruption to your patterns. Your patterning is always to say, yes, sure, just put it on my calendar, or okay, whatever. And it's going to be uncomfortable. More is going to accuse you of wasting your potential. More is going to accuse you of playing too small. More is going to say you're letting people down. But that's not true. That's fake news. That's propaganda. It's nonsense. Because more doesn't care about anything. We already established what more wants. More wants more. It doesn't care about your excellence. It doesn't care about your family. It doesn't care about your health. More does not give an F about your peace of mind. It only cares about more. Continuing. So today we celebrate a milestone, which is kind of funny. If you think about it, it's kind of funny that that this is the 2500th to 2500th episode of the Lifeblood Podcast. Amazing. More. This is the 2500th episode of the Lifeblood Podcast. And that is a lot. There's no doubt about it. It represents a lot of conversations, a lot of really, 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 really wonderful people, our guests, certainly pivots, restarts, growth. It's been immense learning. It's been a wonderful experience. And there was a year that I actually did 500 episodes. I think in 2020, I did 500 episodes of the show. And that was an idea of more. And that was very instructive because it almost killed me for sure. And early on, I really did think that the answer to having a successful podcast would just be doing more. Now I know better. I appreciate that success means doing what matters on purpose without apology. And so wanted to, as my thinking and my personal growth has evolved, I got really excited about a couple of years ago about three things. Maslow's idea of the realization of one's fullest potential. And he, obviously, Maslow has the hierarchy of needs. And so I appreciate hierarchies. I appreciate making sure that you are being mindful of getting all of your needs met and working towards self-actualization. And I came upon a quote from Maslow as a Psychology Today article talking about how Maslow believed that being average is a form of mediocrity, but more so, it's a pathology. So to be average is a pathological thing. And that hit me like a ton of bricks. It's like, that's it. I've always believed that what animates me and my prime directive is the realization of my potential. And for a long time, that just meant more. It meant doing more, taking more on, everything I've been talking about. And then I learned about Nietzsche, and I learned about his idea of eternal recurrence. And put briefly and simply, you want to design a life and live a life that you would happily relive over and over again, exactly as it is, as it were. And that's a pretty, pretty heavy thing to think about. But I love it. And then finally, the myth, the story of Sisyphus, who was condemned by the gods to roll a boulder up a hill every day to get to the top, only to have the boulder roll back down. And the idea that he is happy doing that. So how do you reconcile all those things? How do they all live together? Well, it's, I think, fairly obvious. But in pursuit of our fullest potential, in pursuit of what I can be, I must be, the idea of arete, which is Maslow, the idea that we want to live lives that are meaningful, that are impactful, that we would gladly live again, from Nietzsche, and then to embrace what is a grind of getting up and rolling the boulder up the hill every day, knowing full well that when I complete this, it's going to roll back down, that my work is never done, that I must be the person who is strong enough and capable and willing to do that, to do it every day, but not only to do it every day, but to do it happily. So you mix all those things together, and that was what birthed that, combining with understanding what matters, understanding what must be done in service of what matters, and then executing on that and doing it every day and doing it happily. Keep it in consideration, or take into consideration those six key areas of life, understanding what matters most in those areas, and then being good stewards of how it is that we're allocating our most valuable resources in service of those things. And then finally, I came upon the idea, which was put forth by Pareto, who you're probably familiar with, the 80-20 rule, that 80% of the results are going to come from 20% of the inputs of the activities. Well, he also has this idea known as the meaningful few. And it's simply that these are the most important things. These are the most important activities that if I do, when I do them, they're going to give me the results that I want, the most high impact results. And the trivial many, well, that's everything else. I mean, we are so fortunate to be living in this time where I can literally look up any piece of information. I can go anywhere. I can do anything. It's all available to me right on my phone, for goodness sakes. But that demands that I have to do and know everything that I've been talking about, which is I have to know what's important, what matters. And then I need to come up with a way that I can consistently and repeatedly do that. And if I'm able to do that, then I'm probably going to end up getting what I want, which is what I want. More wants more. I want you to get what you want, same as I want to get what I want. And so in service of that, I wrote a book called The Meaningful Few. It's designing a life that works. And that is the idea. So I invite you, announcing the launch of that book today. Here we are. Also has a course that goes along with it. There's a mastermind that goes along with it, and lots of other additional resources. So you can find all that information out. You can look at it in the notes of the show, but you can get your copy on Amazon. So check that out. So I think that the idea behind all of this is that so many of us feel like there's more for us, but we're drowning at the same time. We feel pulled in so many different directions, and it would be weird if we didn't, because we're pulled in so many different directions. So I'm not trying to add more on. I am trying to help you get what you want by taking things off. Find your way out of this. You can think about it as a recovery path for capable people who are overwhelmed, not because you're a weak person, but because you're a willing person. You're willing to carry too much. You're willing, and you do say yes too often, and you're willing to confuse service with essentially self-erasure. So this work is for people who are ready to stand up quietly and honestly and say, something has to change. Because more will take everything you give it. Meaning only survives if you protect it. And if you don't decide what's enough, more will decide it for you. And it's never going to stop. So once again, a great big thank you for listening to the show, for being a fan of the show. Hopefully it's taught you at least a little bit. Hopefully it's taught you everything that it's taught me. A big thank you to all of our wonderful guests. Super grateful for each and every one of your contributions. I couldn't have done it without you. 2,500 episodes. That's a lot. And Good news. More to come. More to come. But as the show has continually evolved, we'll see what more actually looks like. But more episodes, not for the sake of doing more, but just because I've got a lot more ideas that I'm interested in kicking around and getting across to you. And then one more thing. I dedicated the book to my late brother, John, who would have been 50 years old this month. That's a weird thing to think about. That means that I'm 47, which is also a weird thing to think about. More years, more birthday parties, God willing. So let's tie this up. My name is George. I used to do too many things, and now I do the meaningful few, and that has made all the difference. Thanks for coming along with me. I hope you pick up a copy of the book. You can also go to mymeaningfulfew.com, and we've got a lot more resources that are up there. Some free, some wildly expensive, maybe not wildly, but you get the idea. So thanks again, and please continue to do your part by doing your best.